Our guest today has made an impact through human-centered, data-driven product design at a leading mental health company. In this role, they contributed to double-digit increases in paid subscriptions, free trial starts, and referrals by optimizing onboarding flows and designing growth features. They also expanded access to mental health resources globally by launching a student plan in 7 new countries. And prior experience includes working as a UX consultant and advisor for health tech startups, where they assisted executive teams in improving product market fit through research and experimentation. And they also completed high impact user research and design projects for companies serving millions of patients. With a track record of enriching people's lives through product design, our guest is eager to merge their design talents with product strategy. I'm thrilled to welcome Rally Tomlinson, Senior Product Designer at Headspace, to the Same Logic Podcast. Rally, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dwayne. So excited to be here.
So excited to have you. So let's jump right into it. How first did you get interested in product development, product design? And was there a light bulb moment that triggered everything?
Yeah, you know, actually, I've always been really interested in studying people. From a very young age, I was really interested in understanding how people worked. I love writing, and I would people watch and sit and like write down observations. As I continued through my education, I ended up landing on biology for undergrad because I really wanted to understand how humans worked. But as I got deeper and deeper into the coursework, I felt like there was always something missing from studying cells and studying physiology. And so after I finished my undergraduate, I actually was at a crossroads in life where I was a little bit unsure of where I fit in the world. And so I took a little period to just travel and be a bit of a backpacker, kind of wandering around Nepal and India. I did some teaching English. And as I was there, I really loved understanding different cultures and seeing how it opened up my own mind to meet people that were so different than I was. And actually, there was one moment when I was doing a resident artist position. It was a volunteer position at a surf hostel in Sri Lanka. And the feeling of taking white walls and transforming them into murals and paintings was one of the most profound and wonderful feelings I'd ever felt. Like, I just felt myself like beaming and smiling. And I kind of had this moment where it's like, there's such a beautiful human power that we have to create. And I think it was one of the first moments where I decided I really wanted to choose a career that was creative and be part of bringing new things to the world that didn't exist before me, or that I had some part in bringing to the world. And at the time, I didn't know how that would manifest. So I came back to the US after about 2 years of traveling on a shoestring budget. I kept a blog where I was spending on average $5 a day traveling, and came back to the US and actually found out about UX and did a UX bootcamp and began my journey. And I think part of the reason that UX has been a really good fit for me is just the alignment between understanding users and really the foundation of empathy and observation and people watching, with the other side of loving to create and loving to even understand very technical things like biology, but bringing new ideas to the market.
I love that. So walk me through what a typical day looks like for you. How do you stay focused?
Yeah, that's a great question. So typical day for me starts with a cup of coffee, an espresso machine that I love, and coming online right around 9 a.m., sometimes a little bit earlier. But usually I try and kind of post, not check Slack and email first. I actually try and do like a quick writing moment of what my goals are for the day. And so that at the end of the day, I can kind of look back and see what I've accomplished. I also do this like a pre-week and end of week reflection, which has been really helpful for capturing the day. I think it's so easy for us to like get caught up in all of the shallow work of Slack and email. And when you're in a company that has so much going on all the time, there's a million threads happening. But as a creative, it's really important to kind of set aside deep work time. And so actually I've learned about myself that my best deep work happens in the morning. And so I do everything that I can to set time aside to really work deeply. And I actually have this little tomato timer that I love. And so I will, if I'm having trouble like getting started on a specific design project, or the types of projects I do are either research, Figma design, or writing. So there's a lot of documentation, whether it's writing a strategy doc or creating a deck, or even just communicating research findings that you want to like share with the team and have other people comment on through a Google Doc. If I'm feeling intimidated by what I want to do, I usually just to trick myself into saying, well, you can focus on this for 20 minutes, right? And I'll set my timer. And then I've always found that that's a really helpful way to feel better about my day. And I end up getting so much more done when I can hack kind of getting started. That's the hardest part for me, because once you're flowing and once you're in it and once you've kind of started it, everything else kind of flows so much easier.
I love that. So you mentioned that you traveled pretty much through Sri Lanka. One of the things that drew you to the industry is just basically understanding people and pretty much that being the foundation of empathy. So it's really cool seeing that you work at Headspace. What drew you to Headspace? Was it the knack for understanding people and helping people to be a better version of themselves? Or what was it?
Yeah, so I think as I was doing a lot of freelance work, so I immediately, once I decided to do UX, I immediately started finding contract jobs because I'm based out of LA, Venice in LA, and I started going to networking events. And actually, this isn't too long ago, so I've had a really fast career journey in some ways. I only did my boot camp in April of 2019 is when I started it. And that same month, I found my first job. So I started building a startup app that was basically for news tracking certain threads that you could kind of keep. And we were using data scraping to kind of do the backend side of that. And it was my first time really following a UX process. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go out and talk to users. I'm going to go and like learn. And I really loved freelance work because you really get to touch every part of the product. You get to work directly with either founders or executive team. And I started to build the kind of products that I was building, or I started to evolve the kind of products I was building from working directly on small teams to actually coming into very established teams and more mature companies and doing UX uplifts of their product audit, starting with the UX audit, and then doing collaborative kind of design sprints with the team and choosing on which problems were the most important to solve. And I actually built up a pretty robust portfolio within my first year of working. And Headspace was hiring for their early Headspace Health pilot. They were looking for someone who could design the health side of the portal. So like sort of like an electronic medical record for clinicians, but it was for coaches and guides. And so I ended up having a portfolio that happened to match well with what they were looking for, and joined Headspace as a contract role. I was so excited because I have a personal connection to meditation, for one. And two, I also have a vice of my phone, which is, I feel like there's a lot of apps and a lot of companies out there that may be really successful, but don't leave users feeling good. So for example, after you've been on social media for a little while, your head might hurt, you might feel a little foggy in your eyes, you aren't necessarily the best version of yourself. And I really wanted to contribute to a product that was helping people become the best version of themselves. So that was something that really made me so excited to have an opportunity to work with Headspace, because Headspace is one of the few places in your phone that's kind of a safe space where you can go. You're not meant to spend a ton of time there. You could even just find benefits from just 5 minutes. And people are meant to kind of go there, come away feeling more focused, more energized, more relaxed. And that just seemed like the kind of product I wanted to be a part of. And then just to touch really quickly on the personal side, so I had spent a year in India and actually in Nepal. And part of the things that, so over that 2 years I was traveling, a lot of the reason and the draw was around these big questions that we never have time to ask, like, who am I? You know, what is my purpose in life? Where do I fit in this world? And meditation has always been a way of kind of allowing myself to take a pause and think about those questions. But also, I had really learned a lot from being in these places like India and just seeing how interwoven meditation was in the society where kids in school are, you know, for PE, before they start the PE, they're all sitting together and meditating. And how friends that I would meet were so emotionally mature, and they would refer to meditation as like a a form that you've done since childhood to emotionally regulate. And actually, personally, I grew up, my mom taught me to meditate when I was a really young child. And so it was always a goal of mine to be a better meditator from like the time I was about probably 4 years old. And I even did my senior thesis in when I was studying biology, I did a senior thesis on the neurology of meditation. And so there's a lot of research out there. And, you know, a lot of people think of meditation and science as two separate categories. But there's actually, over the last 10 years, there's been a ton of research. And meditation was like one of the first scientific studies that was proven to show neuroplasticity. So they actually were able to observe physical changes in the brain from people meditating.
Wow, that's fascinating. With pretty much leading a team, you know, it can be very stressful at times, you know, knowing what to do, what to, you know, what to set the different metrics, set the different things that the team needs to be, that the team needs to do. How does meditation help when it comes on to knowing what you're supposed to do and like how you're supposed to guide and lead the team in the best way possible?
So I don't lead a team, but I am part of a triad model. So a lot of companies in tech have this model where we call it a triad, but basically it's product designer, a product manager, and an engineering manager work together. And so I think that there's a lot of responsibility in delivering quality work on time and not blocking my colleagues, as well as delivering other aspects that I'm responsible for. And so I'm more of what you call an individual contributor versus a leader. But I think that meditation has been extremely helpful in my focus and clarity as an individual contributor, because one of the things that I've realized is it helps me choose what I'm going to focus on. So this sounds, I think when we think of it, if you think of the brain going super fast and like firing off ideas, you think, oh, wow, that person must be so smart or something. But actually, sometimes the most powerful minds are like it's when you can pause and like actually choose what to focus on. So I think that for me, like slowing down and having the moment to, I don't know if even that's a good analogy, but basically what I'm trying to say is when you meditate, you're kind of like pausing and letting all the thoughts flow by, right? So you've got this loop that might be going about some, you know, drama or something in your life. And then you've got this other loop going, and then, oh, I have to check Slack. Oh, I have to check email. And so I feel like meditation helps give you the skills to choose, because there's a million things you could put your attention on at any given moment. And we live in a world where you're drawn to tons and tons of information that's coming at you so fast. And so I see meditation as a really helpful tool to train your mind to be able to be a little bit more intentional and actually choose what you want to focus on in the limited time that each of us has each day.
I love that. So changing gears here a bit, what's your favorite product that you've worked on so far, and what made it stand out?
I have worked on a lot of really exciting products. One thing that I worked on recently, it was actually outside of pet space. There is a place in Silicon Valley called the AGI House, which stands for the Artificial General Intelligence House. And it's been really a really exciting point in our tech evolution as a society, because AI is coming at us really fast, and there's a lot of space to innovate with the products that utilize AI. And I recently went to a hackathon at the AGI House, which was really exciting because I got to be around a lot of incredible ML and AI engineers. And I was actually a little bit nervous to attend because I love hackathons. I've been to Cedar Sinai hackathon. I've done two AI projects actually at internal hackathons within Headspace that were really fun. But I saw on the invite, like, must be able to code. And I was hoping that I could contribute something as a UX designer. But it actually was really helpful, because when I started to see the threads coming in on Discord before the event started, when people were trying to form teams, there was thread after thread saying, hey, we're a bunch of ML engineers. We're looking for a UX designer. Hey, we're a bunch of, we created this amazing robotic arm for Stanford, and we're looking for a UX designer to help us like make the product better. And when I went, I was so happy to see that it's actually super important that you found that whatever you're building is has a foundation of empathy, and there's humans and a clear flow in the thought process that goes into the product. And I think even at the end of a hackathon, when the judges are happening, a lot of it is based on the use case, because you're not meant to solve and create an entire app or solution within a couple days, but you can have a really good spark of an idea. And the team that I ended up joining had already created basically an ML AI generated music tool. So it was all kind of the front end was non-existent. It was all through Discord. So like you would be able to kind of generate music through all these prompts and it would get like lost. And so I had a really clear plan of action to help them. And so I started with sketching. We start talking about the type of users that would use this tool. How experienced are they in meditation? What's bringing them here? What problems might they be solving? And really, it was one of my favorite projects that I've worked on, because the problem that we were solving was, how do we get people to be more creative? How do we help people feel inspired? How do we help people track a project and branch it? And so the UI that I ended up designing was basically, you know, you could create a project, and then there was like a stepped builder for building your song, and then it would generate a few songs. And the trick was always like, and I think this is a really exciting problem to solve in AI, is how does that branch happen? And how does somebody evolve a creative idea but still keep track of the parent as that idea evolves? And really, it's made me think a lot about designing for AI products and just building AI products in general, because it changes so much about the way that we think about design. It's no longer a linear journey. It's a branching journey. It's a dynamic journey. And there's so much serendipity and unknowns in how the model could respond, because it's more dynamic. And so that's been an area I've been super excited about lately, and just thinking a lot about like the market of opportunities and their kind of real estate in the AI space. There's a lot of explosion of super exciting startups right now. And so that's an area that I'm watching closely.
Yeah, it's fascinating what's happening in the space right now. So as products get more complex, how do you stay focused on core user needs?
Well, I think that there is a lot of guesswork that we often have going on in our own minds, like around hypotheses we might have or assumptions that we might have around users. Even from leadership, you know, there might be an idea that comes up, and it's all too easy to just run with like an assumption or a hypothesis that you have. And it's also all, you know, most experiments end up not working. So when you're in an experiment-centric product culture, everything that you build is tested, and most experiments do not lift metrics in meaningful ways. And so a foundation of research is really helpful for removing ambiguity and removing the guesswork for the product that you're building. I think that UX has been adopted by so many companies just because of how much it saves efficiency with engineering cycles as well. Because if you're able to really think through an idea and test it with users before building it, you end up saving a lot of tech debt, and you end up saving a lot of, you can only run so many experiments at a time as well. So even if something's really quick to build, you still have to run it for enough time to get a statistically significant result. And so I think that research and understanding your user needs, and also testing and validating assumptions or invalidating assumptions is really helpful to do quick learning cycles with potentially one or two people on a team, versus, you know, bringing in the whole engineering team and having like a much longer build cycle. I think that that's been really helpful for me in staying focused and choosing the most impactful projects, because you really want to choose those investments wisely and it allows us to have more confidence and more of a chance at winning with the products that we actually bring to our engineering team.
And when it comes on to like the future of this current wave of AI, it's really exciting what's happening in the industry. And every week, it just seems that things are just getting faster and faster. How do you think AI will transform product design or product development over the next 5 to 10 years? Probably you could even condense that to probably the next 2 to 3 years. And how do you think designers can prepare for this,
Yeah.
This big shift?
I think the best way to prepare is to be an avid learner and to be a fast learner and constantly checking out new tools and adapting to the times. I think we've seen major shifts in technology before. I do think this one is a little bit different in terms of how incredible AI really is. But, you know, I've always thought that like the college system is a little slow to evolve and adapt to how fast careers are changing and evolving and the skill sets that we need in careers. And so I learned UX and I learned product strategy and IDEO's kind of innovation style. But I do think that AI is fundamentally changing the way that we approach building products, not only because of the tools that we have access to now, which make us faster and make us more efficient, but also it challenges us to think about product development in a little bit of a different way, because typically we go, you know, research first, user needs first, maybe even like mixed with business metrics first, and then you create a Figma file that has often a pretty linear journey or maybe like a couple branches, and then you go to engineering and build the technology that matches the user needs and the problems that you've designed for. But I think in a world where the technology is so incredible, I think you have to be a little bit more technology first versus purely research first. So one company that I think has done that really well is Duolingo. They launched their Duo Max subscription tier. And I work on the monetization team at Headspace, so I'm always super fascinated by ways that people are monetizing products, especially in up-and-coming spaces such as AI technology. And I think Duolingo was really successful because they innovated their product development cycle as well. And I would love to like talk a little bit more about that. So like how they approached it was, I'll send you the link after because there's a really great talk on this as well that they did at Config where I was super inspired. And so I'll send you this link as well for any listeners who want more information. But basically what happened was the CEO, Luis, told the product manager on the monetization team, like, pivot your team immediately. There is a new technology. It's ChatGPT. It was before ChatGPT came out, but the Duolingo Max team had early access to the technology. And what they realized immediately with ChatGPT in of itself is an open field, an open text box is a little bit intimidating for users. So when you give users no guidance at all, it's hard for users to show up as their best learner self. And they knew their learners well, and they knew the kind of needs that their learners had. And so they were actually able to kind of start with the technology and then do almost like a design sprint to eliminate possibilities. So instead of our typical kind of design sprint model where you start with a generative model, it's almost like backwards, like you're starting with a lot of ideas and then narrowing in, which I think is a really interesting new way of thinking about design thinking and product innovation with generative AI and AI in general. Those two phrases together are funny, but basically what they did, so they had, okay, we have this generative AI tool. We know it can help learners. And they took all of the different kind of cohorts of user needs that they were aware of. And then they got a bunch of people in a room and they started hacking prompts. So, hey, ChatGPT, give me a situation where there's a blank and I need to fill in the blank. And, oh, hey, ChatGPT, let's have a conversation about X. And they started to narrow in what was the tool, what was the ChatGPT good at and what was it bad at? And they were able to narrow in on role-playing and basically explain my answer as the two big features that they were launching with Duolingo Max. And Duolingo Max was a new subscription tier. So above, they had like their, you know, free tier, and then they have like their premium, and then their super premium, and then they have Duolingo Max, which includes all the other features of the premium tiers, plus this AI feature, which was $20 a month. And people loved it. And they are profitable. I mean, they're having like incredible metrics. And I just think it's such a great example of a team very quickly and in a product cycle that's a little bit out of the box and a little bit innovative, thinking about how to use technology in a technology first way that still addresses user needs and solves problems and applies it to a need in the market.
So if you could go back 5 years and give yourself some advice, what would that advice be?
Yeah, so 5 years ago, 2018, so I was teaching English in Nepal at that time. And honestly, I would probably tell myself to worry a little less, like it's all going to work out. Because I think at that time, I had a lot of career anxiety of like, what am I going to do in this life? You know, and it ended up, I was actually at the time creating freelance websites for people. So in addition to traveling, I was doing essentially like small mom and pop shops of making websites for them. So like I made a website for an artist, I was doing some small businesses, just basically utilizing drag and drop editors like WordPress and some of these kind of WYSIWYG editors. And I would have said, look, you're already taking a step forward, you know, you're okay, you're gonna figure it out. And I think I was doing the right thing in listening to myself and taking a pause. And I feel like we're so pushed sometimes to be ambitious and constantly productive. And actually, I think the best thing that I did after graduating college was allowing myself to the space to say, it's okay not to know, and you're going to need to do some exploration, and you're going to need to learn a little bit more about the world to see where you fit personally. And I think we all have different journeys in finding, you know, our intersection of where we individually fit in the world.
I love that. And this is my last question here. I ask everyone who comes on the show this question, and the question is, what's one weakness that you've turned into your strength?
So I think that one weakness that I have is doing really hard things that I'm not interested in and finding a way to like motivate myself and to get engaged when I'm not interested in something. For example, like, you know, maybe you need to, when I actually tried learning to code, and you know, you have like a simple screen you're going to create, and it's going to be like long, 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 long lines of code to like work through that one screen. And I think that there's different types of curiosity and there's different types of people in the world. And I actually realized that, one, while we have to do hard things every day, and it's a great skill to build to find something interesting in the hard thing that you're doing, you can also choose to do things that you're interested in and following what we're interested in and creating lives for ourselves where we're really passionate about what we're building, and we get to think big and we get to challenge ourselves in ways that feel super rewarding and engaging has been helpful for me. But at the same time, a little tomato timer and getting started has been a really, really helpful when something does feel big and hard, and it's still something that I need to tackle. And ultimately, those things are often the most rewarding once you do reach the finish line.
Rally, thank you so much for joining us today on the Same Logic podcast. Where can our listeners find you if they're interested to connect?
Yeah. So I think LinkedIn is a great spot. My name's Rally Tomlinson, which I was bespelled out in this title. And then I also have an Instagram, Rally.design, where you can follow me, or Rally Design is my website as well. So Rally.design on the web. And I look forward to chatting with you. Please let me know if you listen to this podcast. And yeah, I would love to talk with you more.
Thanks for listening to the Same Logic podcast. To stay in touch, please follow us on LinkedIn or the podcast app you're listening to this on right now for more episodes. I am Dwayne Samuels. Take care.